Thanks, everybody. I'm Phil. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. I'm really glad to be here. It's a privilege and an honor to speak at any AA meeting. And I know what I'm here to do. I'm here to speak about how God's grace through the 12 steps has healed me of this, you know, horrible, horrible illness. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to meet that responsibility. I will begin with background. I was classified as mentally retarded. They told my mother I was incapable of learning, and I was called the retard in my neighborhood. It was a rough beginning. I was the victim of a great deal of violence. It was unrelenting violence, and I was pretty unhappy in childhood. I discovered alcohol at age 12, and man, did it feel good. It felt great. At 16, someone said, you're an alcoholic. And I knew it was true. I had this register inside me that recognized that my drinking in the summer when I was 16 had changed from what it had been the summer before. It was abnormal. And I knew it was abnormal. I knew that somebody had just told me the truth about my drinking. And so I suppressed it and denied it. And said, F you, and kept on drinking. And it escalated, of course, to dry goods. I grew up in the 70s, right? There were two mottos of the 70s. The first was sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and the other was disco sucks. So as you might imagine, I never learned to dance, and I have hearing damage. Led Zeppelin through headphones, you know. Yeah. I drank until I was 25 when it went out of control. It was just really, really bad, and I couldn't deny it. And I was so frightened by my own drinking, my own behavior, and how really rough people were really afraid of me. That was the thing that woke me up, that guys that I was terrified of admitted they were terrified of me. So on willpower, I stopped drinking at 25. I had stopped the other stuff some years earlier, and I didn't drink for 8 years. I got a college education. I did very well in college. I met and married a beautiful human being. There were all kinds of things that happened. I lost 50 pounds. There were great things that happened when I stopped drinking. And because I did not have this program, I didn't stay stopped. And when I was 33, I had two cans of beer during a stressful time in my life. And those two cans of beer in 2.5 years, well, the last 7 weeks of my drinking cost $9,000. And all of that money was borrowed. I had borrowed that money. And that was, you know, that was what was on the paper, $9,000. That was what was in the bank, and that was gone. But it was also my entire salary for the whole time that was gone and everything else. Reluctantly, I came into AA. I didn't want to be here because, after all, I had willpower that you obviously didn't have. I stopped using dry goods for 10 years. I stopped drinking for 8. So, you know, I was different. Naturally, I didn't stop drinking. And I learned that alcoholism is a disease, that it's a physical illness, that I have an allergy to alcohol, and the manifestation of that allergy is that when I introduce alcohol into my body, it sets off a craving for more and more and more. And although my whole drinking life gave evidence to this theory, it was only in AA that I realized, when the obvious was described to me, that I had a disease. Once I had that concept that I have a disease, the very next sentence was, it's not your fault. Someone said that to me. It's not your fault. You have a disease. And after hearing that 2 or 3 times, I realized, it's not my fault. I'm different. The guy in the house across the street who doesn't have this disease isn't driven by this compulsion to drink more and more and more and more, and then, of course, have to hide it. You know, you can only be on the surface for like 5 drinks, 6. When you get to 30, you've really got to lay low. You know, you got to get out of the light, out of the spotlight. You know, people can't see you, you know. Which brings you to darker and darker places. And people who are sicker and sicker. Where the new normal continues to go lower and lower and lower. And the mind that's already warped becomes more warped. And the secret that is already, you know, 10 miles thick becomes 100 miles thick. And you hide it, I hide it more and more. I have to, because now it's really crazy and really dirty and really disgusting. It is a disgusting disease, among many other things. It is a depressing disease. I mean, there is no depression like alcoholic depression. None. I want to die are the first words you think when you wake up in the morning. Every morning? That's some black, bleak depression. It's despair. And I had that a lot of my life. So I understood I had a disease, and then my sponsor pointed at this shade and said, that is it. That's the spine of the program. That is the program. And I looked at that shade and said, I'll do 10. And I didn't stop drinking, you know. I didn't stop drinking. It's 17 years. In April, I was sober 17 years. I have worked this program for 17 years. I did not take a vacation. I did not rest on my laurels. I did not become complacent. I have worked the AA program continuously for 17 years. Before I decided to do that, there was a period of time, whether it was 4 months or 6 months, that I was in and out of here, not working the program. I don't know, you know, what that period of time exactly was. It's hard to remember 17 years ago when you're out of your mind. Was I in AA for 4 months or 3? Around my birthday, I decided that I was lonely and walked into a bar to meet a woman. And I had enough AA in my head to know I've got a disease. The minute I pick up a drink, it's going to activate the allergy. I don't know what's going to happen to me. And so I ordered 2 drinks as soon as I walked into the bar, because my hands were like this. I knew I was picking up nitroglycerin, and I knew really bad things could really happen. And I knew that this might be my last night on earth, because I knew this was a fatal disease then. So I had to order 2. And when she came back with the 2, I said, make it 3. You know. Then I went out and I spoke in public in front of a lot of people, a couple people who knew me. And that was 25 drinks later. And people who did not know I was alcoholic did that night. They did that night. I never forget, I saw a man a year ago who was there that night. He came up to me and said, Phil, what's the matter? And I could tell, even though I was blown out, that this man could see that I was really, really, really sick, that I was not the man he thought I knew. I never forget it. I thanked him for it a year ago, 17, 18 years later. That night, you know, there was a lot of episodes that night. That night went on and on. It started with those 3 drinks, and it went on and on and on, driving back and forth across the island, all kinds of people in and out of the car, all kinds of substances, all kinds of craziness. And at a dead-end street, I looked in the rearview mirror, which had been knocked so that it was facing me, and I said, I hate your guts. And I thought of 2 people who loved me. They loved me very, very much. I was probably the most important man in their lives. And I said, if those 2 could see you now, they would hate you too. And it was just unbelievable pain. At that moment, I decided that I was going to return to AA, and I was going to do everything that I was told to do the very next morning. Now, I had said shit like that 1,000 times, but it was true that day. And I asked my companion if she would like to accompany me, and she said, "No thanks, Phil, I don't think so." She went to jail, and I returned to AA. And I've been sober since that day, in the end of April in 1996. And, you know, there was enough suggestions for me to know. Sit in the front row, share at every meeting, read the two books of our program, raise your hand and share, get some kind of commitment and serve people, get a sponsor and call that sponsor every single day. So I was really smart at this point, and I said, I'm going to find a guy who's sober a long, long time, who's doing all of those things they tell me to do. And I did. I found that man. He's the man who pointed and said, this is the spine of the program. He was sitting in the front row. He was sharing. He was leading meetings. He shook the hand of every man and woman who entered the group. He still does. And I latched on to him, and I imitated him. He introduced himself as a grateful, recovering alcoholic, always recovering, not recovered, and grateful, always grateful, because a grateful alcoholic will not drink. So I introduced myself that way 17 years later because I imitated him. And I sat in the front row. I couldn't shake the hand of every man and woman who walked into the room because I am an introvert in the extreme, really introverted. I am not gregarious by nature. He is. But after, you know, a little practice, I'd say a dozen years, 14 years, I got a little better at, you know, being social. So I'm still imitating him. He was not a directive sponsor. He's not the kind of sponsor I am. I spend many, many hours on every single step with every man I sponsor. You know, hours and hours with every single step with every single man I sponsor. My sponsor is a one-line guy. One line. He didn't direct me to pages in the book. But I mean, on the third day in AA, when we look at this thing and we see that there's two books, I mean, it's amazing to me how few people are willing to read two books to save their lives. It blows my mind. It's the first thing I did. I picked up both books with a pen and read a chapter a day, every single day, for the first 2 years. I just read and studied the books, both of them, and I still do. I read and study the books all the time because I figured anything that anybody says at a meeting could be accurate. But the program exists in those two books. If I know everything that's in those books and do everything that's in those books, I'm going to get this thing, no matter what I hear that might be mistaken. One day a guy came into my group and he said, I want you to go home after this meeting and pick up your big books, and I want you to turn to page 77. I believe it was 77. And I want you to read what our real purpose is. I'll tell you what it is right now. Our real purpose is to be of maximum service to God and those about us. And I said, this preacher is wrong. This preacher is wrong. We're all wrong if we're preaching. If I'm preaching at you, the energy is going outward to convince you and persuade you to do something. It's not coming straight across the table. It's not sharing. I'm not giving you my experience. I'm telling you what to do. He was a preacher, and he was wrong. I went home, and I opened the book. My real purpose is not to be of maximum service to God and those about me. My real purpose, according to what the book says, is to fit myself to be of maximum service. The presumption is I'm unfit, and I have to work my butt off to become fit. That's a huge difference. So I was grateful for people who quoted pages of books to me because I would go home and I would read them. And I was grateful that I read the two books because I got the spirit of AA. And when people said things that didn't sound right, you know, some guy at a meeting yesterday, no kidding, said to the group, you know, I shouldn't say this, somebody's in the room who was at that meeting. But this guy actually said, it says in our big book, you got to take care of yourself. You got to take care of yourself before you do anything. No, it says we have to be of service to other people. It doesn't say I have to take care of myself. It says I have to find God, clean house, and serve others. It's amazing. So I'm still reading the books. I'm still studying them. I'm still sponsoring. My sponsor said to me on a Tuesday, put your fourth step together and meet me Sunday in Oyster Bay, and we'll get rid of that fifth step. He's a very sly man. Right? Because it was Tuesday, he said to have it done on Sunday, and we'll get that out of the way. I figured, oh, it's not hard. And so I wrote down on a piece of paper, page and a half, the things I was never going to say to anyone, and certainly I'm not going to say on recording tonight. There's no way that's coming out. I am aware of this thing here. I told this man these things that I was never going to tell another human being. I was 6 months sober, thereabouts. The grace of God entered me and expelled my obsession to alcohol and to other substances. That was 16 and a half years ago or so. I have never thought of drinking or drugging since. Not one thought has ever crossed my mind to use or drink. I didn't even do the fifth step right, but I did the spirit of the thing as best I could understand it, reading it off the shades. On my third day in this room, when I read that fifth step and the fourth step, I knew exactly what it is you wanted me to say. And I was not going to say it. And the day that I did, I was freed from alcohol and other substances and have been perfectly freed ever since. I'm not saying that I won't think of it, that I might not use again, that I might not be tempted, but it hasn't happened for me because with all my heart, to the best of my ability, withholding nothing, I took that first fifth step with man and I was freed that day. An interesting thing happened to me after that. I felt the nearness of our Creator. That paragraph on page 75, I'm really not a page quoter. I just happen to know that it's on page 75 in the middle, you know. We will know the nearness of our Creator. We will feel that the drink problem has been solved, you know. That paragraph described exactly what my fifth step experience was. That was exactly the experience that I had. I was so aware of God's love in my life. And I was so aware that I'm not going to drink anymore. That part is over. I cried for several towns. I was a different man. I didn't have to tell anybody I was a different man because everyone told me. Within 2 weeks of my first fifth step, I was a teacher. My students had things to say about me. My family had things to say about me. My friends had things to say about me. And they all began with, Phil, what happened to you? You're different. Different as in better. It was a miraculous moment. Because it was the greatest moment of my life, and I had such a tremendous healing, so much of God's grace and God's love entered me, I didn't need to be here anymore. The problem was solved. So the only time I ever left AA was for 2 weeks after my first fifth step. It's the only time I ever left AA for that long, ever. And during those 2 weeks, I became psychologically unraveled to an extreme degree. Came back to my home group, came up to my sponsor, and I said, hey man, I'm out of my freaking mind. I don't understand this shit. I experienced God with you 2 weeks ago. Was relieved of alcoholism, my whole life changed, and now I feel like I'm crazy. And he said, I haven't seen you around, Phil. What, why would I come around? You have to stay here for the rest of your life to help other alcoholics and drug addicts, to lead them through the 12 steps so that you can save their lives. So that the chain of this miraculous gift from God can continue. You have a job to do. That was the gist of what he said. And then he added, and you're not even 50% through the program. You stopped at 5. There's all these other things you have to do. And we know which ones we don't want to do, right? We know. The first thing we don't want to do is this. The next thing we don't want to do is this, especially with the money, right? Paying back the money? Oh, my God. Yeah. How do you get rid of a sponsee? Insist that they work step 5 or insist that they work step 9 and they're gone. They're not going to call you anymore. It's amazing. If you got too many sponsors, that's how you do it. Okay, we're gonna pay back that money we stole, right? Gee, I haven't heard from you in a long time. No, I'm doing great, Phil. I'm doing great, man. I got another sponsor. He's helping me out. Thanks so much. We laugh when we hear the truth, right? It's so funny. We are so predictable. Do 5 and do 9. 9 is where you get the self-esteem. 9 is where you say to yourself, where I said to myself, I am a good man. I am a good man. That person I always wanted to be, a good man, I am a good man. I have paid back $33,000 to other people. I've given all kinds of money to charity. I have helped all kinds of people in different ways. My whole life is transformed. I have made amends for everything to the best of my ability. I don't even litter anymore. My driving is the driving of a loving citizen. He's laughing because he knows. He said, this is my nephew. He says, I say, I'll meet you there. He says, nope. You know, I said, come with me. Nope, I'm not following you. I'll meet you there. I drive slowly. Your driving is the barometer of your sobriety. If I'm on the road doing this, I'm not sober. If I'm on the road, you know, crazy screaming, you know, I'm going to give some 20-year-old the finger. And then what? At the red light, he's going to hop out of the car with a tire iron or a 9? And then what? Then I'm going to get out and say, hey, Mo, you know, and go to the hospital? No. Well, put him in the hospital. That's not sober. I hear the tough talk. The tough talk is crazy, I think, for me. When I hear the tough talk of people at AA meetings, this is exactly what I don't want to be. This is exactly the thing I don't want to be. Either I have God's grace and God's love flowing through me, and I am a channel for that, or I'm something else. This program is very clear to me in both books. I'm here to render love and service. That is the AA program in 2 words. That's the whole thing. Either I'm doing that, or I'm not. If I'm not doing it, I'm not very sober that day. If I am doing it, or trying to do it, through difficult... Hey, being a human being is messy. It's hard down here. Nobody's got it easy. We are all suffering. Yesterday, if you saw me at the job, you would have seen a man who didn't look this spiritual. Definitely not. But we try. I try. I continue to come back to the center line, which is the love and service of AA, the practice of these 12 principles in my life, and the teaching of these 12 principles to others who come to me. Either I'm doing that or I'm not. If I'm not doing that, I'm not sober that day. And I'm in trouble. You know, either I'm moving toward a drink or away from a drink. I must move away from a drink. My friend Carrie is in the hospital. I saw her today. She finally got out of ICU. I told her I was coming here. She said, ask them to pray for me, Phil, that I make it back to AA. Carrie. She started drinking a couple of weeks ago. She damn near killed herself on, you know, 5 days ago. Almost dead. It's like looking at her. It's the scariest thing in the world. Completely different human being. Somebody who was very kind to me here. There's no love and kindness like the love and kindness in AA. I remember my first day back. You know, when I said, tomorrow I'm going back to AA, I'm going to do everything they tell me to do. My first day back, this beautiful, beautiful woman. Debbie Longhair is what I called her. Because I have no idea what her last name is. She had long, long hair. Put a hand on my shoulder. I was strung out to the max, hungover. I wasn't sober yet. I mean, it was still all over my bloodstream. Put a hand on my shoulder and said, you're a good man. You're going to make it. It was incredible love. Incredible love. I did not feel like a good man. I wouldn't have categorized myself as a good man, and I would have taken all kinds of bets. I am not going to make it. I'm going to be dead in about 6 months, you know, or locked up in a psych ward. It was really hard to be an alcoholic drinking. Really, really hard. When I was, 9 months sober or so, you know, the timing is hard to know, my sponsor said, where are your sponsees? I said, what do you mean, where are my sponsees? He said, you should be sponsoring 5 or 6 guys now, Phil. I said, I didn't even get my cake yet. Most of these people are talking about how they don't have to do a fourth step until they get to their first anniversary. He said, don't you ever tell anybody that, Phil. You'll kill somebody. Don't you tell them to wait a year to do their fourth step. You'll kill somebody. This program was started with people working the steps today, all of them, as rapidly and thoroughly as possible. You don't tell people to put off the thing that's going to save their life. So I never have told that lie to anybody, ever. And I sponsor five or six guys since then. It's been a journey with different guys. Like I said, just bring up step five and step nine, and out they go, and they have room for more. You know? So it's amazing. I've sponsored many, many people. I've heard many, many fifth steps. What a blessing to be that trusted. To become a man who has been that trusted. I've heard everything. A lot of it over and over again. It's awesome what this program has done for me, the person that it's made me. I'm so grateful for that. My understanding of human nature has been transformed by listening to people's fifth steps year after year, and several a year usually. Unbelievable how much sympathy I have developed for human beings. How much of my prejudice has been diminished. How much love and kindness has been brought out of me. That somebody heard my fifth step and first insisted that I do it, and that I became a person who could take others' fifth steps. Awesome. Awesome. Unbelievable. Really unbelievable. One of the greatest gifts. When I was a year sober, a man came into, I have two home groups, Sweet Air is one, St. Bede's over in Syosset is the other. A man came into Sweet Air and he spoke about forgiveness. And he spoke about, he said, there is an indestructible kernel of goodness inside every single human being, no matter what they do. And that sentence, which I've remembered all these years, drew me to him like a magnet. Because there was somebody I hated who had done me wrong. And I wanted to see that good in that person. I wanted to be forgiving, which is the other thing he spoke about. I was sober a year or so at the time. And he said to me, after I asked him to be my sponsor, my other sponsor, he said to me, what step are you on? And I said, man, I've done them all. I'm sponsoring these people. I'm taking them through their steps. He said, great. Call me tomorrow at 5 o'clock in the morning. We'll start with step one. So I did. He's a wonderful man. In the time that's left, I'm going to share my experience of the 12 steps with him because they transformed my life, and I'm so grateful. I call him the man who gave me God. It's a tremendous gift this man gave me. On page 32, whatever it is, I'm not a good page guy, it says, we had to concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. Well, I said I'm an alcoholic. It wasn't very tangible for me. He said, I want you to write 12 examples of how alcohol and drugs made your life unmanageable, beginning with the first time, ending with the last time. Introduce each one with your age at the time. And keep it to 25 words or less, because the minute alcoholics go beyond 25 words, it's either bullshit or I'm going to tell you about this terrible thing I did, but I'm going to give it in such a way that you're going to see that I'm a victim that's been screwed over and abused by people, so that you're going to feel sorry for me, and the thing I did that's really bad over here is going to be all washed away because after all I'm a victim. I've given this exercise to many, many men, and yes, that's exactly why it's 25 words or less, yes. I wrote them down, I shared them with him, and I saw, holy God, this was a very bad story from the first drink at age 12. Oh my God, I was an alcoholic at 16. Oh my God, I was a drug addict by 18. Oh my God, by 21, I couldn't even drive a car in the state of New York, and I didn't want to. I was sick of being arrested. On and on and on, right? Oh my God, I stayed away from this stuff for 8 years, and then look what happened at 33. Holy God, I had a full boat to an Ivy League college. I was one class away from a master's degree. The boy who was retarded was getting a free education. at a prestigious school with the most famous people in the country. And I was dropping out. Holy God. What was the common denominator? Alcohol. One drink was the common denominator. Wow, was I able to admit that I was an alcoholic, that I was powerless over alcohol, and that my life was unmanageable as a result of alcohol. I really saw it. Shocking. For the second step, he asked me four questions. What are the qualities of my God? Where is my God located? What does my God want from me? And what does my God want for me? When it says in one of the books, God is everything or God is nothing, those are two abstractions, everything and nothing. I don't have a concrete conception of God after answering that question. He actually made me sit down and write down a conception of God. And he said, I want you to put out of your head everything you've ever been taught about God, everything you've ever heard about God, everything you've ever read about God. And it was quite extensive what I had read. And I did. I became the empty cup he suggested. And I asked myself some questions. What are the qualities of my God? And with his help, the first quality I came up with was unconditional love. And he said, are you sure about that, Phil? And I said, yeah. He said, what does unconditional mean? It means no matter what. No matter what I've done, no matter what I'm doing, no matter what I will ever do, God loves me. And I said that to him. He had me read him my second step over and over and over for, 2 months. He was very meticulous. And I believed it. I do believe it now. No matter what I've done, no matter what I'm doing, and no matter what I ever will do, God's love for me is unconditional. It was a short step from there for me to believe that about all of you and everybody else. My fear of God left me completely. I've never been afraid of God again. I don't fear punishment. I don't fear hell. I don't feel any of these things. I feel that God loves us all and that the end of this story is beautiful. Beautiful. For everybody. Changed my life. When I thought about where God was located, inside, in the big book it says, deep down within us. It says that like two or three times in a single paragraph. Deep down within us. It is only there where, they use the pronoun he, I don't believe God is masculine. It is only there where he can be found. Deep down within us. When I go over that passage in the book with sponsees, I just point that out. Where is God located? According to what they're teaching us in AA, inside. Inside you. You may be crazy, sick, drug addict right now, but the God you're looking for is in you. It's not up there. It's not out there. It's in you. Then the next thing is AA meetings. Everybody in this room who's been here for 30 days or more has seen God's presence in the rooms of AA. It's amazing. We have felt it and seen it. We've witnessed it. We've watched transformations. So that is the place where I find God most often, in AA. In nature, in music, in art, in the kindness that people render to each other, or that I render to people, or that people render to me, and so on and so on. What does God want from me? A lifetime of sobriety. God wants me to work all 12 steps for the rest of my life and to carry the message to other alcoholics of all 12 steps for the rest of their lives. That's the fundamental thing God wants from me. God brought me here. God didn't bring me to a zendo, or an ashram, or a church, or a cave. God brought me to AA. That is where God wanted me to discover God, and that's where I did discover God. It's just a natural follow for me. I need to do this for the rest of my life and to help others to do this for the rest of my life. I can have all kinds of other spiritual stuff, and I do. The Enneagram, A Course in Miracles, Theravadin Buddhism, Taoism, these are things that I practice that influence me. But this is the basic for the rest of my life. Has to be, or I'll end up like Carrie. I could, in that hospital bed. which is unacceptable. In the third step, he said to me, look up the word will, and I did. My will is what I want. When I write a last will and testament, I want my nephew to have all of my worldly goods, all $637 worth of. And the car is worth something. You know, it's for you. So that's what I want, my last will and testament. I want it so badly that I'm going to ask Cammie to witness it, and I'm going to pay a lawyer a couple of bucks so that it happens, so that my niece doesn't get the car. Because I want Luke to have it. It's what I want. I've heard people say, you know, that it's thoughts and actions, that life means actions, but the meaning of life is so much greater than my actions, that it's just one part of it. And will is not my thoughts, it's what I want. I use my willpower to lose weight. It's everything I want. So I had to write down on a piece of paper everything I wanted. Holy God, what a list that was. It's amazing what I want. You know, some people want to be comfortable. I want millions of dollars, man. Because you got to have a couple million to give away. I wrote down everything I wanted for myself, everything I wanted for other people, and everything I wanted for the world in general. And I surrendered this in the presence of my sponsor. I have taken that third step again and again with my sponsees when they take it with me. The fourth step, you know, people say the instructions in the big book are very, very clear. They weren't for me. I had to study that, like insanely study it and break it down and break it down and break it down and then it became clear. But you know, a lot of times the metaphors and even the language, I love Bill's language, but sometimes it's a little, you know, out there for me. It took me a while, a long while, to really understand it. So I took the Joe and Charlie tapes, and I did the fourth step that way first. That was my second fifth step. I did that with three men, told those secrets all over again, and received God's blessing all over again, and became a better sponsor all over again. It's just a miracle, this program. The first part of the fourth step, it says, we searched out the flaws in our makeup, which had caused our failure at life. So I wrote down a list of my character defects, the flaws of my makeup. And then it asked me to write down who I resent and why I really resent them, what I'm afraid of and why I really fear it, because I'm not trusting God is the answer to that. My sexual misconduct and why I really did it, and the bad things that I had done to other people and why I really did it. So I went through that process yet again and told someone again. In the sixth step, I realized, because my sponsor had a piece of paper and a pen, and wrote down character defects that were mine, and he said, now I want you to write a prayer asking God to remove these things and perhaps to replace them with positive alternatives or opposite virtues. So the prayer I say every day, which is, I think it's 4 pages long, it begins with, God, please remove my fear and give me love, faith, courage, and confidence. God, please remove my greed and give me charity and generosity, and so on. And I just prayed for all of those defects and still do. He was, you know, quite an interesting man. He realized he could push me and that I would continue to be pushed. Someone at a meeting said the other day, you have to become willing to be led if you're going to make it. And I'm really terrified of alcoholism, terrified of it. I see what it did to me. I was willing to be led, and I'm still willing to be led. The eighth step, I had to write another list, and the 4 categories were, who did I harm physically, emotionally, mentally, or spiritually? In that spectrum, everybody that ever met me was harmed. So I wrote down this list, and then I began to make amends. The money was the hardest. It was very, very hard, but I found that when I paid the first $15 toward a $5,000 debt, when I sent that first check for $15, God gave me more work and more money than I have ever had in my life. It was amazing. I lived really well, and I paid back $33,000 in 3 years, 3.5 years, whatever it was. I had all kinds of money from my former stepson at the time and my wife and for whatever I wanted. It was amazing. And as soon as I concluded those financial amends, God cut my income by 50%. And 6 months later, cut it by 50%. I was like, oh my God. But when I became willing to pay, money rushed at me. It rushed at me. It was amazing. You know, there are no coincidences, we say. My sponsor had to really pull to get me to pay the money back. Hey, man, I don't have money like you. I can't be paying back. Just start, Phil. Just start. I started, and phew, there was the money. I wish I owed somebody some money and could make financial amends now, you know, so that would come back in. The 10th step, you know, it clearly says in the big book that we have this evening review that we do. And for years and years and years, I said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this at night upon retiring. When we retire at night, we ask ourselves these 7 questions or 10, however you count them. And I said, I'm going to do this. I'm really going to do this. And I never did it. So what I finally decided, you know, about 4 years ago that has given me peace of mind is that I'm going to do the 10th step in the morning with my morning prayers for the last 24 hours. And now, finally, I'm doing the 10th step every day. So I ask myself those questions. When I come to the question, was I kind and loving toward all? If it didn't say toward all, the answer for me would be yes, almost every day. But it's that toward all. You know, one of the paradoxes of the program as I read it is that we're shooting for perfection. We're not shooting to be okay. We're shooting for perfection, knowing we're never going to get there. But that's the goal, spiritual perfection. That's what I'm aiming for every day, though I'm not going to get there. And it's amazing, this program, the paradoxes and the realism of it. So I asked myself that question. Of course, the answer is no. And for some reason, when I ask myself, what could I do better? The first thing I always answer is diet and exercise. It's the first answer every morning. I did have an issue with my boss yesterday that didn't get bad, but the day before, 2 days before, it got bad. And I turned to a coworker and I said, because I've learned from the 12 and 12, the spot check inventory, which I use all the time, right? I turned to my coworker and I said, now listen, man, was I bad to him? Do I owe him an apology? Did that come out disrespectful? Was that insubordination? You know, I asked this guy 20,000 times. The way I just spoke to my boss, who did something terrible that put me in physical harm, you know, and I reacted to that. And he said, no, 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 no. And my boss walked around the corner at exactly the moment. I grabbed his shoulders and I said, I love you. I'm very, very sorry if I upset you. Even though I believed my friend that I hadn't, I said, let me just know that I've wounded my boss's ego. And let me make amends for that right here on the spot. It's great. It's a gift of this program. So now he loves me again. Which is good, because I was pissed at him yesterday. And I'll be pissed at him again. The 11th step. You know, I named some of the things that I'm into, you know. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. And the spiritual education is really important. You know, someone said that AA is spiritual kindergarten when I first got here. That's not true. This is incredibly difficult work. It's incredibly difficult work. It's daily, nonstop, spiritual effort on my part. It's not kindergarten at all. It's the hardest thing in the world to do. And the rewards, of course, are miraculous. And it also says, be quick to see where religious people are right. And it implies that I should be exploring other things. And I have, you know. I'd like to tell you with the 11th step that I practice meditation every day. I do have a meditation cushion. It cost a lot of money. A Zabaton and a Zafu. The Zafu is the round one, you know. I don't have such great knees anymore, so I don't sit on the floor too often, but I have the cushion there. It's on the floor tonight. I was going to meditate today. Again, I don't meditate that often, but I still do. I close my eyes. I pray all the time. I say about 25 minutes of prayer every day, that 7-step prayer that I mentioned before. and the prayers of our program, which someone transcribed out of the books and gave to me, and personal prayers that I have written for myself to try and remind myself why I'm here, what I'm doing. And when I sit down, and I do sit down, I don't kneel. I sit down with a cup of coffee and a cigarette to say my 25 minutes of prayers. That's how I usually do it. It takes that long. It takes me that long. And then the world is a better place when I go out there. I'm a better employee, a better friend, a better sponsor. There's no doubt about it. If I leave the house without the prayers, it's risky business. Very risky. And if I say my prayers, give myself all of that time to say those prayers, then chances are good I'm not going to have to grab my boss by the shoulders and say, I love you, I hope I'm not an asshole, you know? No guarantee, though. The 12th step. Man, like everybody else, you know, I thought, I can't sponsor anybody. What can I don't have anything to give. I mean, I can't sponsor anybody. What if I say something wrong? You know, when a doctor gets trained, right? They go to medical school, they go $2 million into debt to become doctors, and then they get sent in a residency, you know, maybe in a bad neighborhood or somewhere where they learn surgery, you know, and people die. People die because doctors don't know what they're doing. And as a society, we totally accept that. If doctors don't put that knife into people and make those mistakes, they're never going to become the surgeons who save lives. And we have a society where we need lawyers who, when they get out of law school and get into the courtroom, fail to defend people correctly and innocent people go do time because the lawyer didn't have the experience necessary to keep the innocent person out of jail. And as a society, we accept that. We learn by doing here. If I'm working on my shit and my sponsee is working on his shit, God will be in the middle and we will both be blessed and we will both be free of alcohol and we will both work this program. Even if we're idiots and don't know what we're doing, God's grace will bless us both if I'm working on my shit and he's working on his shit. And the two of us are honest and trying to be whatever we think this thing is we're supposed to be. That will happen. I know that from experience. That is what happens. If I wait until I'm ready to be a sponsor, it's like I'm going to be a tennis player, but I'm not going to play tennis. I'm going to read books about tennis. And now I'll hop onto YouTube and watch videos on tennis. But I'm not going to play tennis until I'm really ready to be a great tennis player. No. This is different. It's life and death, and we do make mistakes. We definitely make mistakes, and all of us who are honest when we try to sponsor people, we agonize over it. We agonize over it. You know, with Carrie, when I went over to her house to bring her cigarettes 2 weeks ago, I mean, this was not the woman that I knew. She was so blown away. I mean, I thought she was on drugs. I didn't know what the hell was going on. I was afraid she was going to puke in her sleep and die. I really was. I didn't want to be the last person to leave her. That's all I could think about. If I walk out of this house and this chick dies on her puke and I'm the last person who was here, I'm going to say I should have stayed. You know, I called a woman to help me, and thank God she did. She's here tonight. She came over. And the girl's alive. She's in ICU. We don't know what to do. I mean, I'm helping people for 17 years here. I did not know what to do 10 days ago or 13 days ago. I had a junkie at the house who was, you know, hell-bent. My sponsee brought him to me. The guy had jumped out of a car. He jumped out of a car. He was whacked out of his mind. He was going from my house to heroin. My sponsee was driving him around all day trying to, he called me up. He said, listen, man, this guy, I'm going to lose him. I don't know what to do. Can I bring him over to you? And we both tried to save this guy. Out he went. I don't know where he is. I have no idea where that guy is. It is scary, man. What do you say? What do you do? Despite all the years of experience, what do we do right here, right now, with this live one who's just jumped out of a car, is all broken up, and is going to cop? You know, there's just no way to know. But we practice, and we practice, and we practice. My life depends on carrying this message. this message. This message. Exactly this. These 12 things. Do these 12 things. My life depends on that, and that is a big motivation. It's certainly the only motivation why I did them. You know, I didn't come here and say, I'm going to be a really cool guy. So I'm going to do this and be really... No, I came here and said, I'm going to die from this shit. My magic words were, this shit is going to kill me. Tomorrow I'm going back to AA. I'm going to do everything they tell me to do. Those were the magic words all those years ago. And it's still the truth. If I don't do this thing, I might not make it. And I have to make it. And that's the message that I have to carry to others. I work slightly differently now than I did in the beginning. You know, I have 17 years of experience in AA. I need to talk from that experience, not from how it was for me in the first year, or the second, or at year 5, or year 10. I found that I can ask people to do more work in this program and do it sooner. And I do. I say things like, there are plenty of men and women who will talk to you in AA. Plenty. If you want to work the 12 steps, I'm available right now and we'll begin today. If you want to talk about the girl and the job, there are 1,000 wonderful men in AA who will talk to you. I'm not one of them. You know, I'm not one of them. And I'll say that up front, and the guy will say, no, no, it's you, it's you. I want to talk to you, I want to work the 12 steps. And then he'll talk to me about the girl and the job. This is a true story. You know, I can say it because he's not here. I'm at the group, right? We've all seen this shit, right? It's amazing how crazy we are, right? Guy comes over to my house, he says, listen, man, I want you to be my sponsor, but all I want you to do is I want you to show me the spiritual work you do. I've been through the 12 steps. I just want to see the spiritual work you do. That's all I want to do. So I had him over for lunch. I laid out everything. These are the AA prayers. I say them every day. Here's my 7-step prayer. I say it every day. This is the Enneagram, and this is what I do here. This is A Course in Miracles. I'm a 5-year student of this. This is Theravadan Buddhism. This is what I do here. This is what I do here. And he says to me, you know, there's this girl in AA. And I said, yeah, 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 we all got a girl in AA. And I start to talk to him again. I say, now, if you say these prayers every day for 4 days, I guarantee you, your state of mind's going to be different. He says, you know, my boss at the job is a real prick. I said to him, now, man, let me ask you a question. You told me you wanted to come over to my house to see the spiritual work I do on a daily basis. I was flattered by that. Nobody ever asked me that. And that's why you're at my dining room table. Now, you're talking about some girl in AA, and you're talking about your job. I believe you have come to my house under false pretenses. And he said, no, bro, I'm just, you know, I want to say, I said, get the fuck out of my house. I have thrown many people out of my house, right? And then they say, Phil's a prick. I'm here to work the 12 steps. I like people. I love people. I do. I really do love people. I'm afraid of you, but I love you. But it just blows my mind how many people come up to me. I mean, I think you can hear. There's nobody in this room that has any doubt at all what kind of sponsor I would be, right? And yet people will come up to talk about the girl and the job and everything else under the sun. Now, I can do the soft sell. There's a time for that. Bro, just come to the meetings. This is a good meeting. Come here. Listen to this guy over here, this woman over here. They get their phone up. These are cool people. Talk to them. Don't, you know, just come. If you tell somebody on day one, this is what you got to do, a lot of them are not going to do it. I didn't. I needed to be here for months, hearing the truth, hearing people like me say, we have to do all 12 of these things, before I finally said, I have to do these 12 things. I have to become an expert at these 2 books. I have to understand what they're teaching me, and I have to do what they're telling me to do. And my life depends on this. But it took me 4 months in here to get there. So I can be that guy who's a talk sponsor, if I have to be. I don't like it, but I can do it. God freed me from alcoholism and drug addiction on April 28, 1996. God removed from me the thought to use drugs or alcohol after I was 6 months sober and took my first honest 5th step. And God has blessed me with the ability to be of spiritual service to other men in AA and to receive their fifth steps and guide them through the 12 steps and guide them to sponsor others. I have done my job in AA. I am not going to stop. Until I'm senile or dead, I'm going to continue to work this program. I will never leave AA. Those are the two secrets. Come to AA is number one. Never leave is number two. I will not leave AA. Thank you so much for saving my life.